Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And we have Lieutenant Jeff Wenninger on the show, a retired commander from LAPD, and he's got a new book coming out called On Thin Ice. If you're watching the video portion of the show, you see it over his shoulder there. And that is, you can go to jeffwenninger.com or onthinicebook.com. Now look, last week, you know, I had Randy, I had Jeff on the same show, and Randy's saying, hey, come make the announcement on my podcast. I'm saying, no, Randy's already promised it to make the announcement on my show. And so we had said that we were gonna, Jeff is going to make the announcement on this show. When he's going to do the release on the book. But there has been a little bit of a change. So Jeff, I'll let you explain it to our audience and kind of get the hype going and fill them in on where we're at.
Yeah. So I am going to be making the announcement on this show, but the decision has been made that what I'm going to do is I'm going to do some marketing and social media outreach. And what ultimately is going to occur is starting the date of the release, every time I'm on the show, I will be giving away a book in a VIP box. And it's not only the book, but you also will have gifts that come along with that. And the idea is to get people to come to become listeners of the show with the opportunity of getting a book for free. So you'll be able to find that on my social media. You'll see when we're going to ultimately make the announcement. And then I will make that announcement, and then we'll start with the free book giveaways.
All right. Love it. So it's going to be strategic. It's the only thing that's changed is that it's going to be more strategic. So I love it. So thanks, Jeff. And congratulations on the book. We're almost there. It's almost out. So I gotta get a VIP box. I mean, he's offering to give him away on the show. I gotta talk him into giving me one. Hey, a shout out to our sponsors, guys. We have Gauls, our title sponsor at Gauls.com, ComplyTechnologies.com, our satellite sponsor. Thanks to them. We launched on satellite radio May the 5th, and man, it's been a great ride ever since. So we're loving it. Also, gunlearn.com, bluethegold.com, mymedicare.life, and Safeguard Recruiting, our streaming sponsor. And thanks to them, we're reaching about 1.5 million people right now on stream. Also, Two Bells, they built a new online store at leoroundtable.com. And whenever Jeff's on the show, and today is no exception, he sent me some codes earlier, they're going to give away, and that is $20 off your next purchase at the Leo Roundtable store. So again, they rebuilt our store, and they are Two Bells. That's the number two, then BELLES.com. That's their site. They built a new online store at leoroundtable.com. And so if you enter the contest, and we'll tell you how in a minute, if you win, you get $20 off your purchase at Leo Roundtable. Anything you want to buy out of the store, plus they're going to give you a free coolie as well. Great opportunity. A shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Thanks for carrying our content, Brian. Also, Ray Dietrich, former lawman.com and lawofficer.com. Thanks to all those entities for helping make the show happen. And now, what in the world are we talking about today? Guys, you know, after the weekend, we always got a smorgasbord of stuff to choose and talk about. DOJ seeks unsealing of the grand jury testimony in the Jeffrey Epstein case and the Maxwell cases. I'm going to give you a little bit of insight on that. And so I'm looking forward to starting off with that one. Another one, I don't want to say it's a teaser. We're going to talk about this when we get the feds on the show. But Tulsi Gabbard is breaking down the Barack Obama-led treasonous conspiracy against President Trump. I'm reading that from an RBM Red Voice Media news article. When you guys find out what has happened behind closed doors, and now these confidential documents have been declassified, and now we're finding out what happened behind closed doors and what they did. And I'm not talking about Biden. I'm talking about Barack Obama. This is bad, and this is not a party thing, because I wouldn't want my side doing it to the other side. This is something that we need to talk about. So we'll be talking about that later this week. We got an ex-Philly officer sentenced and immediately paroled after being convicted in a traffic stop shooting. We've talked about the shooting, what had happened. We gave some updates when he was when he went to jail. And we're going to be talking about that. It's a little controversial, but we're going to cover it. And Amherst police released body cam video of an incident where an officer was stabbed and a suspect was shot. you guys better put your seatbelts on. It's an adrenaline-filled story, that one. Then we had JSO, that's the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office in Florida. They released a body cam video of a police shooting that left an armed robbery suspect dead, but the officer got shot too. There's some issues with how that went down. Then we have Dallas Apple Stores. That's Dallas, Texas. There's like three stores. Kept losing product. Now a police officer is accused, and a guy working off duty at the Apple Store. It's not good. Then we got Fort Lauderdale police release body cam of an officer fatally shooting a suspect that's armed with an airsoft gun. Of course, how do you know until the part's over, right? Then dash cam captures a driver fleeing a Wisconsin traffic stop. He starts ramming police cars. And I don't think this agency's got a lot of training personally. Then they finally decide, we're gonna stop trying to do the rolling roadblock and maybe you just start doing the pit and stuff. There's some lessons to be learned from that one too. So we got a lot to talk about. I saw you smiling, Jeff, while I was reading that last one. So let's go to and do the first one here. We got about 6 minutes before we take our first commercial break. So TampaFP.com, that is the Tampa Free Press, DOJ. They seek to unseal the unsealing of the grand jury testimony in the Jeffrey Epstein case and the Maxwell cases as well. Now, the subheadline is that federal prosecutors file request in Manhattan to release the records from a high-profile sex trafficking investigation. So, yes, the DOJ, Department of Justice, on Friday, they formally petitioned a Manhattan federal judge to unseal grand jury testimony related to the prosecution of Jeffrey Epstein. The request was filed in the Manhattan Federal District Court, where Epstein faced sex trafficking charges prior to his death that happened 6 years ago, if you can believe that. His death was officially ruled a suicide by the New York City Medical Examiner, despite what everybody says. I'm not saying they got it right. I'm not saying there's not a cover-up, but I'm saying that's what the Medical Examiner said. In addition to Epstein's testimony, the DOJ also requested that the court unseal grand jury proceedings involving Ghislaine Maxwell, a longtime associate of Epstein, and she's currently in jail. She was sentenced to 20 years and back in 2021 after she was convicted on charges of aiding Epstein in sex trafficking. Now, it goes on to say the decision regarding the unsealing Epstein's grand jury testimony, it now rests. And this is, I think, strategic. It's resting on the judge's shoulders, Judge Richard M. Berman. And he was actually appointed back in 1998 by former President Bill Clinton. And he presided over the Epstein case before his death. So this is not new to him. He's connected to the case. He's familiar with it. And, you know, these grand jury proceedings, this is like the best stuff that they have. They want to get that, you know, indictment, that go ahead, that green light from the grand jury. So there's a lot of stuff that should be in here if the judge allows people to see it. Now, what I want to talk about is that, yeah, there's pressure on the Trump administration right now, and I'm glad that there's pressure. I'm not saying there shouldn't be, but I'm extremely familiar with organized prostitution cases with RICOs involving prostitution. I've done them. I've worked with the feds. I've done it on a local basis as well. So here's the scoop. A lot of people are upset because of a client list not being released. Now, look, personally, do I believe there's a client list? Absolutely. Or at least there was. There is a zero chance that you have a guy involved in this level of human trafficking, sex trafficking, and the clientele that he had without having a list. And we have every reason to believe that he had reasons for, look, I'm sure there's videos and audios and all kinds of things that implicates a lot of people doing a lot of things, but there has to have been a client list. Whether there's an argument that it's been destroyed or it's not becoming available, there certainly absolutely was a client list. And I will go a step further. Even if it's, let's just say it's not available or it's been destroyed, I will go out on a limb and I'm going to say that somebody has a copy of it somewhere. There's no way, in my experience, and I'll bet Jeff will say the same thing, that there's not a cop somewhere that did not make a copy of that or a recording of it, or at least read it and dictate afterwards some of the names of some of the stuff that was in that. Now, but here's where I'm going with this. A lot of people are upset at Pam Bondi, who I know, the Trump administration, and they're upset about this list not being produced. Are there issues with saying that there was a list and then saying that there was not a list or that there were files? I know that there's been some jargon with the verbiage used. And I think that they have tried to be very careful about the verbiage they use. And maybe this thing wasn't called a client list. And that's why they think that they can get away with saying it's not a client list. It actually had a different title to it or whatever. No doubt that there was. But look, let's say that the client list appears today. Let's say that we have it and we got a list of clients. What are we going to do with that? And Jeff knows as well that just because you have a list of potential clients doesn't mean you can charge people with anything. You give me a video of someone snorting cocaine. You think that I can use that video to charge somebody with snorting cocaine, a drug that I can't do a Valtox test? Even if I Valtox test a drug, I have to send it to the lab to know irrefutably that it was in fact, you know, cocaine. So that list is going to do absolutely nothing. The only way that you're going to be able, and I've done an undercover storefront where I've done a RICO where the predicate crime was prostitution and I had to go out. You know what I had to do? I had charge slips and credit card receipts of the money. Cause you know, you have to prove that it wasn't voluntarily, you know, it wasn't just voluntary sex without consideration being paid. You have to have consideration for the being, you know, that act of prostitution. So I had to go out and I had to grab the Johns, you know, the guys that did it. And I had to get the people they did it with. And I had to interview these people and stuff and had to build a case. That's what you need. So there's no way that this client list, if it magically appears, or if you have video, that is going to by itself allow you to build a criminal case against somebody. It's just not going to happen. A lot of people don't realize that you need so much more. So everybody thinking this is a smoking gun and all these people are going to go to jail and they're going to lose their careers and their jobs and all that stuff. There may be a court of public opinion on some of the stuff, but that is not going to happen from the release of names. Not even necessarily videos and stuff like that. So much more needs to happen. And arguably, for the most part, I don't think that you're going to be able to get there for the large vast majority of that stuff. So I just want to throw that out there. Look, it's time for a first commercial break already. So look, stick with us, guys. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about our title sponsor, Gauls at Gauls.com. And, you know, as police officers, we all know we can get our gear from a lot of different sources. And when you throw the online mix into it, it seems like it's almost endless, right? But I want to remind everybody here about the importance of buying their gear from the companies that actually support law enforcement. And I don't know of a company that does that better than our title sponsor, Gauls at Gauls.com. Even their motto is proud to serve those who serve, which, of course, they do in spectacular fashion. And they walk the talk by supporting dozens, and I mean dozens, of focused organizations like this radio show. So when you're looking to get your gear, please support our title sponsor by going to Gauls at Gauls.com. Fantastic company, unbelievable customer service, and they really go the extra mile for you. And they have gift cards. We give away a couple every week on the show. Hook up your family, friends, and loved ones with a new Gauls gift card, and they will be your new best friends as well. So if you haven't checked them out lately, go to Gauls at Gauls.com. They pretty much have everything but guns and ammo, Gauls.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by former LAPD Commander Jeff Wininger, retired as a lieutenant. And we're talking about the release or potential release of the grand jury unsealed documents involving Jeffrey Epstein and Maxwell. And look, I was just putting, I'm trying to get people, I'm reading, there's a lot of online coverage about people being all upset about, you know, the list, you know, has not been released. And now, you know, Pam Bondi is saying that, you know, it doesn't exist. And I was just with my past and with my background and experience, I'm just letting people know factually that the names on a list does not mean you can go out and arrest people. Because I'm telling you, I assure you, absolutely cannot do that. Not on the federal level, not on the state, local level. It simply legally cannot be done, nor should it be able to be done. And I was mentioning an example on, you show me someone snorting cocaine and give me a video of it, I can't do a thing with that. I can't prove that it was cocaine. And I was even mentioning that even with a Valtox test, which is a street level test we do to at least make sure that we have what we call, you know, PC, the probable cause to arrest someone, but it's not irrefutable proof. You know, we still have to send that off to the state lab, and it has to be verified that it was cocaine before we go to the court. If it's not, guess what? They're walking, and rightfully so. So there's all kinds of things that need to be done. And I was also talking about a undercover storefront that I ran for a year and a half. We were set up by the FBI. It was a RICO investigation, the predicate crime for that. And you have to have a predicate crime. That was prostitution. And these were escort services and so many things, even though I've got myself on video dealing with the escort service representatives and the escorts and the owners and all that stuff, and we're doing transactions and stuff. I was able to get the names of the Johns, but I still had to go out and I still didn't have enough for case. I still had to go out and I had to interview the parties that were involved in this. And there's so much that you have to do. And even then we're talking about, you know, for prostitution, there has to be consideration, right? It has to be something of value exchanged. It just can't be you hooking up you know, doing freebies, you know. So there's so many things that go on. So that list, which may not, maybe it's been destroyed. I still will go out on a limb. I said earlier before the break that I believe that it exists in some form still. There certainly was a list. I think that someone has either made a copy of it or documented it after seeing it. So I wouldn't be surprised to see that coming out in the future. I like the pressure. I'm not extremely happy with the way things have gone down. I think that we should have been a little bit more careful about things that we say to the media and to the public, because a lot of people just don't get it. But if you're going to bed at night thinking that this list, if it came out, that a lot of people are going to go to jail and be held accountable, that's a falsity. It simply cannot happen like that. And the likelihood of us being able to go back and build a case on someone just because their name was on a list, because that could be, it could be accurate, it could mean something or it could mean nothing. It could be false information, you know. So there's more of a value to heighten it, you know, to have a public court of opinion, if you will, you know, maybe slamming people. But I don't underestimate the ability of the U.S. government to use people's names on that list for their benefit as well. If there's political leaders with other countries, or maybe things that we just haven't even thought of, if there's other benefits to using the list, I'm all for it. Without you having to make that list public, there could be a lot more benefit to our country in the background, it being used for purposes that we don't even know about. And I'm okay with that, because I get that. That's when it comes to drugs and sex and human trafficking and stuff, there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind closed doors with a lot of important people that we don't necessarily know about, nor should we necessarily know about. And I think you just have to trust the people that you've elected to put in office. So I know I've kind of absorbed most of the airtime, and I apologize, Jeff, because usually I like to just do the hosting and not talk. This has kind of got my panties in a wad on this one, just watching all the hoopla about this. But any input on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's really kind of a self-inflicted wound by the current administration, making the statements that they had a list. Now, whether there's a list that was maintained by Jeffrey Epstein that clearly delineates everybody, I don't know, maybe, maybe not. But what I, at a very minimum, absolutely, there's a list that could be comprised as a result of all of the evidence that you review, and you'd be able to compile who was involved in certain things. It gives you kind of an idea. Now, I find it very interesting, and it's funny when I watch all these news shows and they talk about this issue, and the topic comes, well, Trump is trying to hide something. He must be compromised as a result of the information that will be coming out. Perhaps that's true. I don't know. But the argument that people are saying that, well, had Biden had all this information during the 4 years of his administration, if Trump could go down, why wouldn't he go down with it? Yes, that's true. But if you take a step back and say, but I don't believe it's just Trump. I suspect there's people that are in the Democratic Party or that are friends of the Democratic Party that are also equally as compromised as perhaps Trump may be. So knowing Trump, he's not going to go down, you know, not swinging. He's going to take people with him. So I think this thing is just uglier than people realize. I don't believe most Americans take that next step that you're talking about as far as criminal prosecution of people. They just want to know. But the problem is that, and you kind of touched on it, is that it's kind of prohibitive in the fact that it's, the damage that can be done by releasing this information when there's no substantial evidence to be able to prosecute is prejudicial. And it can create circumstances that the benefit does not to the public does not justify the damage done to those people that may be on lists that we can't make any other conclusion than the fact that they're on that list. So it's just really muddied waters. It is unfortunate how they stated they had something and it's on the desk and everybody's salivating waiting for it, and then complete 180 on that. That's an issue.
No, I agree. I had a good college professor, FLG man, brought this up. Probable cause is more than mere suspicion, but less than absolute certainty. And that's the definition, guys. Commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, guys. Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. They're committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-ethics manner, utilizing their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Technology. Now, their flagship product we all know by now, it's called the Glove. And it's helped officers tens of thousands of times with no injuries. And yes, you heard that correctly. I said no injuries. The Glove has actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or conducted energy weapon, the Glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, they virtually eliminate weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions has ever come across, that I've seen. Go to ComplianTechnologies.com today and tell them that Chip sent you. Again, that is ComplianTechnologies.com. Now it's time to talk about Blue the Gold at BlueTheGold.com. If you're struggling with the ins and outs of warrantless searches and seizures, or if you're worried about the liability in case you get it wrong, say hello to BlueTheGold.com. They translate search and seizure doctrines into clear, straightforward concepts that any officer can relate to. Plus, they give the training for free thanks to BlueTheGold.com's free weekly webinars. Now, coming up on July the 23rd, it is Miranda and Beyond. You can sign up at BlueTheGold.com today and join thousands of your peers in blue and step up your legal game because, frankly, you and your agency cannot afford not to. BlueTheGold.com. Welcome back to Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. Chip the Block here, joined by Jeff Weninger, former LAPD commander. I think that we've pretty much exhausted the whole Epstein-Maxwell thing, and hopefully our users can see things from a different light now. Anything you wanted to add on that before we move on, Jeff?
No.
We're good?
Nope.
All right. So, look, let's go ahead and talk on this update here, real quick before we get to a story with a video component. WGAL ex-Philly officer sentenced immediately paroled after conviction in a traffic stop shooting. Look, this is the one where there was a pursuit. We got two cops in a car that's chasing. And so when they catch up with the guy, we got our officer that bails out of the car, runs around the front of the bad guy's car. And he thinks he sees the bad guy with a gun. Now, up until this point, last time we talked about this on the show, and I don't know if you were on the show on that day or not. It hasn't been that long. It's only been maybe a month or two. They did not give a lot of information about what, we didn't really know what the officer's side of it was. We suspected that he thought that he saw a gun. The bad guy had a knife. But even on the video footage, the body-worn camera, it's really difficult to see through the windshield and through the driver's window of the car, which is where the bad guy was when the cop ended up shooting him. I am calling him a bad guy. He fled from the cops. He ran. He had a knife. He was, you know, even though he had a knife in the car, the fact that he fled from police alone makes him a bad guy. He was non-compliant. This all could have been avoided if he just didn't run from the police. But that said, our cop has now come out and said that he thought that it was a gun. So our judge in this case is Glenn Bronson. He sentenced Officer Mark Dowell to 9.5 months in jail and immediately granted him parole because he'd already been in jail for 10 months following his arrest that happened back in 2023. The judge is getting some flack over this one. And it does say that a jury in May acquitted Dowell, 29 years old, of murder charges and instead convicted him of voluntary manslaughter, reckless endangerment, and possessing an instrument of crime in a fatal shooting of this 27-year-old, Eddie Irizarry. Now, Dowell's attorney, the cop's attorney, Brian McMonagall, he said the judge did the right thing and talks about this guy being a public servant. Now, we got the DA, the district attorney, Larry Krasner, saying that the judge went way below the sentencing guidelines in handing down a sentence that set Officer Dowell free. And he said the low end of the standard and the range of sentencing guidelines, it calls for conviction of 4.5 to 9 years in prison, he said. And remember, I'm going to go back this again. It was 9.5 months in jail, and he'd already been in jail for 10 months. So that's the difference. DA Krasner declined to criticize the judge, but said he was deeply disappointed with the verdict that makes people lose faith in the criminal justice system. But here's what the judge said, and this is why I like this judge. Judge Bronson said the shooting was not a classic voluntary manslaughter case. Remember, that's what the cop got convicted of. And he said that the officer's conduct was not out of character. He said that he was not a threat to the public. He said after the shooting, And he shot the bad guy six times. He rushed this bad guy to the hospital. And the judge said that that doesn't happen in voluntary manslaughter cases, that the cop is trying to save the guy's life. And Dow's attorneys insisted that the 2023 shooting was justified. And now it's going through saying that car was driven erratically, several blocks, wrong way down a one-way street. It was running from the police SUV. Police SUV pulls up and our cop gets out and the driver's window was rolled up. And that was a side window. And of course, there's the windshield, and that there was a 7-inch knife that the bad guy had that the cop thought, you know, was a gun. How many instances have we had at nighttime where bad guys are holding a cell phone in their hand? They're running through someone's backyard, going up on a residence. They're trying to break in, and we shoot them because, you know, we think that it's a gun. So another officer yelled knife, but now they're saying that it was gun. It doesn't really matter whether he yelled knife or gun or if he yelled anything. But that's the way this judge dealt with this. There's some people giving him flack. Your thoughts, Jeffrey, on this?
Yeah, I actually know quite a bit about this case. I write about it in my book. And, you know, ultimately, you kind of have to understand what motivated the officer's actions to begin with. So you have to understand that area. It's the Kensington area of Philadelphia, which is known for extensive narcotic sales and fentanyl issues and things of that nature. And when you watch the video, what occurs is the suspect drives up and he actually parallel parks against the curb. And the officers are in a police SUV and they get out and they run rapidly. The shooting officer runs rapidly to the driver's side door. And the pretext for the stop was vehicle code violations. So that action, drawing your weapon, running to in front of the car with your gun drawn, frankly, deviates substantially from tactical practices, if actually you believe that what you have is a vehicle code violator. But I don't believe that for a minute. Due to the nature of that area, they believe they have somebody associated with narcotics. And either in the sales or, you know, the purchasing or whatever of narcotics. So that would what would prompt that type of aggressive tactic to try to prevent the destruction of evidence. So you can, you know, make an arrest and have a case that would be fileable and prosecutable and winnable. But so when he runs up, really what we have here is I don't question that at the moment he fired, that he believed he had a gun. And yes, there's a discrepancy on whether it was a knife, but the partner said knife or gun. I agree with you, Chip, that doesn't matter. What did the officer see in that moment? But what did we just have with the Supreme Court ruling? Is the Barnes case, where they're basically Barnes versus Felix, where they're basically saying that you have to look at the totality of the circumstances. And I would suggest that if I'm going to take my police hat off and be objective and unbiased, that the actions of the officer that led up to him being in the position where he felt the need, and in this case, I would say the objectively reasonable need to use force, deadly force, in that moment, those actions leading up to it were deficient, to the point that you could look at that and say, that's gross negligence. And it was that gross negligence and deviating from how you were trained and what the standard tactical practices would be led to this shooting to occur. So I kind of get it. The other thing that the article really doesn't mention is this officer completely refused to comply with the investigation and give statements. He wasn't cooperative, which muddied the waters. And then the other aspect of this, and it's not talked about, it really has nothing to do, I guess, with the officer, but the initial public statement by the police department is that the suspect had exited the vehicle with a knife and lunged at the officer, and the officer fired. And the officer, he fired six rounds, and he literally fired him within seconds of reaching the driver's door. And, you know, the reality is that put a big cloud over the entire incident to begin with, where you have the police department that's making a statement that was proven to be completely false when the video of a resident's home becomes public. So, you know, they had to draw back on that statement. But, you know, I never want to see a police officer serve time. He did serve 10 months, he'll never be a police officer again. Mm. He's lost his job. You know, but I do get it from the family standpoint. You know, you're looking at 5 to 9 years on the low end for this. And he got time served with 10 years. You know, comparatively speaking, you look at the Kim Potter case in Minnesota, where she literally just made a mistake and she served more than 10 months. So I get it, but you know, we have to move forward with poise and grace. I don't believe for a second that this officer acted maliciously. He didn't. What the deficiencies we saw in his tactics were a result of probably poor training and some overzealousness, but I don't see that there's any malfeasance there. So I think the accountability standard had been maintained with the 10 months, but I do understand where the family's coming from. Yeah. I guess I'd feel the same way if it was my child, I guess.
You know, I'm glad you pointed out that he was uncooperative with the investigation, because I had forgotten about that. And that does help explain why we've had such little information coming out. It would have been nice to have known if he thought that was a gun in the first place. I remember Muhammad Noor, you were talking about Minneapolis. I think that was in St. Paul. Muhammad Noor shot Justine Damon. And remember, he did not cooperate with that investigation. He was that Somali immigrant that became a police officer that went to jail. And I had huge issues with him. Well, we know why he didn't cooperate with the investigation, because we know what happened. But yeah, I had a huge issue with that as well. So yeah, I it always bothers me if cops are not voluntarily cooperating with an investigation. That's just a huge flag. It's a good point. Good point. Are you ready to roll on to one with a, we have enough time to whet the appetite for the video component, but are you ready to roll on to one of those?
You know, let's go to the armed robbery suspect in the foot pursuit where the officer gets shot in the leg.
All right. So I'll tell you what, we're going to go to the commercial break. I will find that story. We've got about 22 seconds before a break. So we're coming up on a commercial break, guys. Stick with us. We will be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And, you know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day. But it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and also disciplinary issues. But GunLearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending the live seminar at GunLearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Affianco. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. Now, if you have your own agency, the founder, Dan O'Kelly, has got a deal for you. You can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. You can go to GunLearn.com to get more information. Again, that is GunLearn.com. Welcome back to Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com. And, you know, I did find the video. I do want to mention that twobells.com, that is the number two, then BELLES.com. They built a new online store at legalroundtable.com. So if people in radio land or a podcast or whoever's listening, if you are interested in getting some of our gear, the prices are low. I pay the exact same price you guys pay, and I order from there. And look, the prices are low because we're trying to get our gear out there. So if you go to our online store at legalroundtable.com, and support us by, well, we're not making money off of it, but support us by wearing our gear out there. The prices are low and inexpensive. We're actually doing a two bells giveaway for the people that are watching the stream right now. All they have to do is type in the number two and the letter B for bell. Give us their email address on the stream to be automatically entered in. And we do that every time Jeff is on the show during a live show. We'll do that during the live show. So there are ways to even get a $20 off that two bells giveaway. So check that out as well. Hopefully at the end of the show, we'll be announcing our winner. So we're going to be talking about a video component. So we're going to go to rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. We have JSO, and that is the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office in Florida. They released body cam video of a police shooting that left an armed robbery suspect killed, and the officer ends up getting shot in the process.
Jason Val Norfolk. Cut into the church corner. I'ma fucking shoot you! Hey! fucking get on the ground! On the ground! Hey, you about to get shot! Get on the fucking ground! You slow as fuck! Hey! I got a gun on the fucking back of your head! Fucking piece of shit! Alright, get on the ground! Alright. Hey! HQ Victor, 326. I've been hit, but the suspect's dead. He just shot me.
So it's after 8 o'clock in the morning on Wednesday, July the 9th of 2025. An officer-involved shooting occurs, and it's in the Sherwood Forest area of Jacksonville. So earlier in the day, about 7 in the morning, witnesses saw a suspect near a business, and then they told police that it appeared that he was casing the joint, right? And then at 8 o'clock, an hour later, the business opens. The suspect enters shortly afterwards. A customer shopping in the business, and they hear the suspect tell the cashier, "Give me your money or I'll shoot you." And the customer was able to call police services and give a description of the suspect. It kind of sounded to me like maybe there was like an open phone during the robbery as well, like a 911 call. The officer caught up to the suspect and began handcuffing him on the ground. And that's when the suspect rolled to his right. They leave so much stuff out that I'll cover in just a second. But he rolls to his right, pulls out his gun, and he fires two shots. This is the bad guy. So one shot hits the officer, Mercado, in his leg. The officer returns fire, strikes the suspect. The suspect, Jamari Atkins, he's 20 years old. He does not survive. He dies. Now, let's go to the show notes here. There's a lot of stuff going on. One thing I noticed that our cop is in an SUV. He gets to the point where he bails out of his SUV, but he wants to get a long gun. And remember, this is an armed robbery suspect that he's chasing down. He has to go to his back of his SUV, pop it. Then he's going to go inside of a metal box in order to retrieve the rifle, the long gun, get some more information about the guy was fleeing the area. Then I don't know if they got rules about him driving with a gun in the cockpit or not. I suspect they probably do. What's he do? He has to go back. He puts it back in the lockbox, closes the back, gets back in the SUV, and he starts driving again. Now he sees the bad guy, and he's got to give chase. But now he's going to only be armed with a pistol because he doesn't have enough time to go back and pop the trunk and of the SUV and get in the box and get the gun. So now he's chasing the guy without a long gun. So he chases the guy down, there's a short foot pursuit. The bad guy is getting, I think it looks like he's getting winded. He starts slowing down. Our cop catches up to him, puts him on the ground. So our cop is straddling, and bad guy's in a prone position facing down. And our cop has got his firearm in his right hand because he was making statements telling the bad guy, "Hey, I'm going to shoot you. I got a bead on you. Dude, I'm going to shoot you." And so the bad guy stops, goes down. So our cop's got one hand. He takes his left hand off the bad guy while he's sitting on him. And it looks like he's either messing with a body cam, maybe making sure that it's on, or maybe going for his microphone to talk to dispatch. But the bad guy's not handcuffed yet. And the bad guy's still armed with a gun. Bad guy rolls over, fires two shots very quickly. Cop gets shot in the leg. Cop does have his gun in his right hand. I suspect he shot the bad guy it was kind of hard to tell, but it was probably in the back of the head. Because he goes on radio and says he's dead. You know, there was no doubt to our cop that he had killed the bad guy. But the cop's been shot. So that's the way this goes down. A lot of takeaways from this. We have 5.5 minutes. But rest assured, we have Jeff Weninger on the show today, former commander LAPD. And he used to deal with this stuff on a daily basis and break down the shootings and stuff. So I can't wait to have you dissect this one for us, Jeff.
Yeah, so this video, I think, was like 18 minutes long or something like that. And just so the listeners know, Chip will break it down and tell you where to kind of start watching the video. And I think you had us starting to watch it like 8 minutes and something into the video. And I was like, I watched from the beginning. I had to watch the whole thing. So I found it amazing. You know, the guy goes into the convenience store. He's in there for 6.5 minutes. And the clerk, wow, she was brave. Because what she actually did was on her cell phone, she called 911 and left it open. And she was giving all kinds of information without the suspect even realizing it.
Don't shoot me. And, yeah, that was good. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was kind of interesting. So, but he finally flees. And I'll get into some stuff. When we have a suspect, and this is the LAPD, and this may be unique to the LAPD or agencies that are similar in size and have the resources available, but it's our tactical practice and pretty much mandate that if you reasonably believe that a suspect is armed with a firearm, that when you go in foot pursuit, it is not for apprehension purposes. It's for containment purposes, that you're going to be moving, monitoring their progress, and coordinating the containment through a perimeter and directing personnel resources to those containment spots. And then utilizing resources like the canine and stuff to do a methodical, systematic grid search of the area that's contained. That's how the LAPD views this. You never, when you reasonably believe someone to be armed, want to go in foot pursuit for the purposes of apprehension. Why? Because things like this can happen. And I personally don't have an issue with the rifle. If your intention is going in a foot pursuit, it's my experience working down in South LA for all those years in patrol as a policeman, that when you go in foot pursuits, you're often, they're not just straight runways. You're often going over fences and those sorts of things. And to be carrying a rifle would be kind of detrimental. It would hinder your ability to navigate the environment that you have to navigate. But at the same time, it potentially could put you at additional risk. So I personally don't have a problem with him not having a rifle. It wouldn't have been my initial instinct to get that rifle in that circumstance when you were looking for the suspect and the suspect may flee. But, you know, the big mistake is, you know, when you tackle somebody and you have your gun out, I just don't ever, that's just probably not the best idea, especially when the other person's armed. There's too many things that you do not have control of that can dictate how ultimately this may be resolved, either in your favor or tragically not in your favor. So it's really about controlling the aspects of a tactical situation and scenario to your benefit and maximizing that. That's the key to making sound judgments in your decision-making under rapidly unfolding tactical situations. And you have to run these scenarios through your head before you're actually there. You know, I believe there was a female officer that I saw initially before they actually located him. So there was another officer that was in close proximity. So you weren't by yourself. And he was by himself in the foot pursuit, which LAPD would never do either. Right. You never go in foot pursuit by yourself. You always have to have somebody. And like I said, even in this circumstance, if you chose to, they would be critical of that decision. But at the same time, you know, going into that pursuit with the intention of apprehension versus containment would get you in the grease too with the department from a tactical standpoint. But that said, not every agency has the opportunity to have that kind of those kind of resources that can respond in such a moment's notice. So.
Yeah, excellent stuff. I still love, well, look, I still have an issue with the rifle being in the back, and it should be in the cockpit. I suspect they have a policy about preventing him from doing it, or else he simply would have taken it with him. I agree with you about, in this particular case, if I had a choice, if I was going to go hands-on with someone, I probably would opt to go hands-on without having to worry about the rifle, even though I've seen it. You've got the single sling option. I've seen guys do it and have done it very well. It takes a high level of practice to be able to do that. I'd rather go on with just my pistol, but good point about you have that pistol in your hand, you're fighting one-handed right now. And even if you got control of it, but now when you take both hands off, you know, you don't have any hands on the bad guy. Yeah, that's good point on everything you pointed out. There's definitely room for improvement, and we're not trying to be overly critical. If we can save one cop's life or save someone from being enrolled to hurt from just simply critiquing what we do, doing an after action, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. There's a human component. There's always ways to do things better, and God help us if we're not able to learn from our mistakes or to evolve and get things better, right? So thank you, Jeff Winninger, so much for being on the show. I appreciate it. And I know that you've got your book coming up as well. I do want to mention The Wounded Blue, thewoundedblue.org. But for Jeff's book, On Thin Ice, jeffwininger.com, or go to onthinicebook.com to be able to check that out. We've got some more information about that coming up on the stream in a second. A shout out to our sponsors, Gauls.com, ComplianceTechnologies.com, Gunlearn, Blue the Gold, My Medicare, Safeguard Recruiting, and Two Bells. Hey, thanks for your support, guys. We'll look for you back tomorrow at 12 noon Eastern.